7 a.m. in New York, 1 p.m. in Johannesburg, and 6 p.m. in Bangkok. Welcome to the Expat Happy Hour. This is Sunday Schneider Bean from SundayBean.com, and I'm a solution-oriented coach and intercultural strategist for individuals and organizations. And I am on a mission to help you adapt and succeed when living abroad and get you through any life transition. My dear sister-in-law, Karen, introduced a term to me in German that I'd never heard before, but I'm really glad I know. In the English equivalent, it's called the soul striptease. And it's kind of what I feel like I'm about to do right now. This episode of Expat Happy Hour is celebrating my 20 years of living abroad. The first time I moved abroad was for a semester in Toledo, Spain in 1998. Oh my God, I feel like an old lady. And in this episode, I am going to share my lessons, some personal stories, and the three mistakes I don't want you to make. Today's episode is part of a four-part series focusing on connection, getting unstuck, purpose, and direction. Episode 74 to 77 focuses on reconnecting with yourself so that you can also connect or reconnect with others. Episodes 78 to 81 are on how to get unstuck, and episodes 82 to 85 has all focused on purpose. So since episode 86, we've been focused on direction, and today goes even further. So make sure you listen to the end of this episode because I've got some free stuff coming up for you and a way that you can get a complimentary one-to-one coaching session. So stay tuned to the end for that. All right, here's what I'm going to do. I just sat down and reflected on the last 20 years and what I mean, I literally have like this kind of pit in my stomach from going through all the highs and lows I've experienced since 1998. And what I just have done is noted the ones that have stuck out. Of course, with the time constraints of just a podcast, I can't share everything. And if you want more, there's a lot in the earlier episodes of Expat Happy Hour. But what I'm going to do today is I'm going to pick out some of the highlights from my journey and share with you the lessons I've learned and the mistakes so you don't have to walk down that same road, right? I've done a lot of things right. And I've also, you know, learned a lot through my favorite method of learning, and that's failure. So I am sharing that all with you today because I don't want you to have to go down that road on your own. I want you to avoid some of those things because you can benefit from my hindsight and my insight. All right. So we'll start with 1998. I did a study abroad in Spain and it was my first time abroad. Well, I mean, I'd been to Canada, but when you live on the border of Canada, that doesn't really count as going abroad. And you know, I remember getting into the airplane and feeling how scary that was. We were in a very small airport and my grandmother was on the other side of the glass. And I don't know if she was crying or I was crying, but it felt like a really big deal to be going over the ocean for the first time. And in hindsight, I think it's so silly because I do it all the time and I know you do too, but it felt like a big deal in the beginning. So I got there and I lived in this former monastery where it was like turned into a dorm room for the study abroad in Toledo. And it was wonderful. I was with a ton of fellow Americans and others from North America and South America. And we were all there to enjoy Spain, study, you know, Spanish art and learn Spanish. But here's what happened. Yes, I studied El Gran Maestros de España, the Spanish painters. And I went out and had a great time drinking calimocho and dancing till 6 a.m. with friends and enjoying parts of Spanish life. But what I did wrong is I made a mistake from the beginning. I chose to stay in the dormitory and not with a family. And because of that, my Spanish was, you know, okay by the time I left. And my understanding of Spanish culture was okay when I left. And what I did was the equivalent of going to a once-in-a-lifetime concert and buying the cheap seats, even though I could afford the front row. Meaning, you know, whatever I was doing to be, go abroad in Spain, I could have chosen a family or the dormitory, and I took the safe route. And when I look back on that, it all turned out fine. Yes, I was in my comfort zone. Yes, it was already a stretch for going abroad for the first time, but I missed an opportunity to go deep fast. I missed an opportunity to really hone my Spanish, to really add depth in my cultural understanding. So what I want to share with you from that is don't make the same mistake I did. Don't get the cheap seats when you can equally buy the front row. And what that means is do it when you have the chance. How many times do we go somewhere and we think we have forever and we say we're going to do it, but we never get to do it? So I learned in Spain, although I have really no regrets from how I spent my time in hindsight, and now that I'm older and I can see with a distance, I realize how I went to the cheap seats and not to the front row. And I don't mean that from a financial perspective. I mean that from the experience. I watched a lot from the distance, and I could have got more from my experience from the front row. So where in your life, in your experience right now, whether you are a long-term migrant in your country with your partner, or if you're only in a certain country for 2 years, what do you have the chance to do now that you haven't done yet? Do it now. Make that plan, right? Where are you sitting up in the nosebleed section, as we say, where you can see things only from a distance? And where would you like to be up in the front row? I know for me, I've mentioned this in one of my most recent podcasts, I feel like I want to do more to be connected to local activities here and the community and make a contribution. And I'm so lucky that one of my South African friends has a project that I can get involved with, so I can get away from the distance seats and get closer. All right, so that was 1998 in Spain. And what happened after my study abroad is I was working for a consulting firm called Accenture, and I had some time in between assignments. So I did what every parent fears their child will do when they're 21, and I went backpacking by myself through Southeast Asia. And while I was there, I was going to actually teach English. And after like 2 days, I decided to can that idea and travel around Thailand, Vietnam, and Laos. Again, this is 1999. This was before cell phones and Facebook groups and all of that, where we just had internet cafes that you would check in, you know, from time to time. And they had, you know, the dial-up, like doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, all those sounds that would happen when you were trying to send an email. And it kind of freaked my parents out. Anyway, I remember being there and changing plans. You know, I had a plan and I ditched it after 2 days. And that is not like me. I'm a planner. And that led me to enjoy Thailand, but then go to Vietnam and see things I would have never seen in my life before. And shortly before leaving Vietnam, I met this amazing Swiss guy. And what do you know? In the northern part of Vietnam, we happened to travel to the same areas to Laos, you know, hint, hint, I'm going to this next, you know, city and, you know, nudge, nudge, why don't you go there too? But we end up saying goodbye to each other on the border between Laos and Thailand. And I remember saying goodbye, you know, to this cute guy that I thought was awesome and was in a position where I was supposed to take a bus that I had planned. And in the very last moment, something told me not to. I ended up not taking the bus. I ended up staying in the city again. And instead of taking the bus, I took a train. And when I got to the train station, I ended up, the driver said, do you want me to take you around to buy souvenirs? And I actually had to buy, you know, last minute gifts because I was leaving the country soon and wanted to bring home things to my family. And what happened when he asked me if I wanted to go around and buy souvenirs? I said no. And not being hungry or thirsty, I walked into a restaurant. And that's where I saw that cute Swiss guy that I had already said goodbye to, which led me to spend more time with him. And long story short, we've been married for 18 years and have two kids. So what I've learned from my time in Southeast Asia that I want to pass on to you is to really follow your gut, even when it's not rational. I mean, let's be honest. Being in a binational relationship isn't rational. Saying yes to moving across the world to be with somebody you care about isn't rational. I mean, if I made a list of, is this a good idea to give up my life and go move across the world? It probably wouldn't look like a good idea. But if you truly follow your gut and trust, things that can, that are more beautiful than you can imagine can come to be. So that's what I learned in 1999 in Southeast Asia, is to let go, to go with the flow, and to trust my gut. And life took me in directions I would have never imagined. Part of it was led with a Bhutanese art dealer, but that's a totally different story I can save for another time. So fast forward to Switzerland, which I moved to in 2000. And there was a moment I remember I was sitting in this cafe. For those of you who know Switzerland, you might know there are two main grocery stores. One is Migros and one is Co-op. And at the top of one of these restaurants, they have a cafe. And I would go there and I would get, you know, pie and coffee. And I would study my German. And I would be there in this cafe, the youngest person by 50 years. And I'd look at all these ladies with blue hair and white hair and silver hair, and they'd be having pie and coffee. And I'd think, is this it? Am I going to live here for the rest of my life? And am I going to die here, you know, with like 12 cats, my apartment? And what I'm doing right now is sitting here doing my German homework, conjugating words and learning der, die, das, dessen, denen, wissen, whatever I was learning. And I thought, are you kidding me? This is my life right now. I'm sitting here in this cafe eating pie and studying articles, learning genders for words. And it was kind of a low moment. I'm like, I could be outside. I could be running. I could be swimming in the river. I could be hanging out with friends or family. And I'm sitting here in this cafe with the fear that fast forward to me at 85 and all of this German homework won't pay off, that the cashier will ask me even at 85 whether sprechen Sie Englisch, whether I, you know, understand or what my native language is. Do I speak English or German? I thought, oh my God, is this going to pay off? So here's the thing. I look at my young self sitting there studying German, and I give her a bucket load of empathy because, to be honest, it sucked sitting there hour after hour through the drudgery. But why am I sharing this with you? Because if you are relatively new to a cultural context, or if you're living with a partner in another country and that country speaks a language that you didn't grow up with, I kind of have a hard message for you. And that's to get to the drudgery as soon as possible, right? Like me sitting there learning German, I thank her for doing that because last week I delivered coaching in German. I give training in German. I was able to coach a CEO of a Swiss company in German. Thank you to her who sat there with her pie through the drudgery because the return on the investment early is massive if you do it right away. Maybe for you, it's not a language. It could be recertifying in your local context, which I know just pisses me off, to be honest. Like if you're already a lawyer, you have to get another law degree in another context. Like doesn't seem fair, does it? But if you're in it for the long haul, do it soon so you can benefit from it. I have a friend who has multiple degrees, a bachelor's, a master's from one country, and she got a master's degree in law in another country and is now practicing as a lawyer thanks to getting with the drudgery. And drudgery in a sense of the hard work, getting your hands in there dirty and going for it, right? Because avoiding it or denying it doesn't make it go away, even though I wish it did. Right? And maybe for you, it's like starting a job that feels below your professional level, but it's that exact experience that could get you hired. I know for me, I did a professional internship that was not paid, but it got me my dream job when I was living in Switzerland. Right? So remember, the thing that I want you to remember is that they're called growing pains for a reason. Right? You're going to be uncomfortable, but that means you're growing and it's going to feel crappy and it's totally worth it. So that is honestly what I learned from starting my life off in Switzerland. It's not a sexy message. I know it's not a fun one, but it's true. And the other part that I know about that is related to how I felt lying on the carpet of my husband's bedroom that I had recently moved into his apartment on a Friday night, just crying my eyes out. While he was out with friends, I said, no, honey, go ahead, go have fun. I'm fine alone. When all I really wanted to do was have a break from everything I'd been experiencing. And that night, I remember opening up a magazine that he bought me in English to make me feel more comfortable, like comfort food kind of for my soul. And there was a 27-year-old editor who had a communication degree. And she was, you know, the editor of this massive magazine. I thought, you know what? If I'd stayed in the US, I could be doing that. But I'm not. And it was that moment where I was just having to come to terms with the fact that me, as I thought I was falling apart. It's like the you that you were slowly gets shed. The layers and layers move away. And you sometimes you feel like you don't even know who you are anymore, right? But that's okay. Because when I look back on 20 years, I am so thankful that I'm not who I was then. I'm so thankful that I've changed in ways that I couldn't have predicted. So in hindsight, I think the mistake I made was I focused more on the pain than on the growing, right? So if I could go back on that Friday night in the fetal position, I would like to do it with more distance, with more empathy, to say, gosh, you know what? This is hard. Things are not the same. The things that were comfortable for me are not there. My professional experiences are not recognized here. And you know what? It's okay. I'm going to get this. I'm learning. I'm changing. It's going to be okay. That if I could go back, I would focus more on the growing and less on the pain. Again, they're called growing pains for a reason. And if we focus on what we're learning rather than how crappy it feels, then it helps keep you afloat. Okay, so, you know, I'm mentioning the tough stuff, you guys. Let's keep in mind, there were lots and lots of highs, lots of amazing things. You know, I remember the joy of going to the onion market at 3:30, 4 in the morning, you know, with my partner in Switzerland and discovering a city come alive and looking at the fabulous things they baked and tasting the sweets that they gave out in the shape of onions and watching children throw confetti and just taking in this gorgeous cultural experience. My life was full of those gorgeous things as well. But what I'm looking back on and sharing with you now is the things that were hard. Because if I can say one thing to you that will help you see yourself in that track and take a turn away from it to save you time and energy, then this is all worth it. Right? So I spent the first 4.5 years living in Switzerland, and I realized when it was time for me to leave Switzerland temporarily to go get my master's degree, I was leaving with kind of a bittersweet taste in my mouth, kind of a love-hate relationship with Switzerland. And for those of you who've visited Switzerland, you might not understand that because, you know, gorgeous Alps and beautiful scenery, et cetera, et cetera. But when you live there and you adapt and you really try to make your way, there are some things that people don't always know about that are hard. So I land, you know, I leave Switzerland with this feeling of bittersweet. I land into the U.S. in a state I've never lived in to get my master's degree. And there was a moment where I met some of my best girlfriends from high school on a girls' weekend during my master's degree. And we were all back in the U.S., right? Back, you know, finger quotes, home again. And we had spent some time at the mall and they went into a shop because I just couldn't deal with shopping anymore. And I remember sitting on a bench waiting for them. And I was in this huge mall with giant, you know, sized brownies and super tall coffees and things I hadn't seen in a long time because I'd been in Switzerland. And I just started crying, like out of nowhere. And I remember that feeling of, oh, wait a minute. Remember how that you who I was in Switzerland is going to die and it's going to be okay? I realized, that applies when you're a repat, when you repatriate, that I was a different person than I was when I had lived in the U.S. 4 or 5 years ago. And that realization was happening to me there, in a puddle of tears in the middle of this stupid mall. And so the learning I had in Switzerland gave me some solace when I was repatting to Switzerland, if you want to call it that. I felt like I was, you know, at the university hovering above the U.S. in a university portal, so to speak, rather than actually engaged in everyday life. But I was there and readjusting, you know, discovering, oh man, the yogurt I used to eat here is so full of, you know, unnatural sugar, I can't possibly eat it anymore. And gorging myself on foods that I haven't had and I didn't get access to when I was in Switzerland, really sort of, you know, enjoying that dance of what's different and what's the same. And for a short time, my husband was able to join me because we were both studying in different countries. And for a period of time, he came and lived with me. So now the tables were turned. And I watched him go through struggles where he had to recreate himself professionally. And it was tough. And there was this point where I thought, you know, he said something like, you know, it's so hard because of XYZ. And I looked at him and I said, I know. And he said, how do you know? And I remember being really upset because I was like, are you serious? How do I know? Because I just lived it. I just spent 4 years doing it. I caught myself feeling frustrated. Like, how could you not know that I went through that? You were there next to me. But you know what? it was in that moment that I realized just because I went through it doesn't mean my partner gets it, right? You get it when you get it. And one of the reasons why I wrote the love letter every international couple needs to read is because we can't assume our partner gets it. And if you're in a binational relationship, I would recommend you Google that love letter every international couple needs to read, because I've heard from hundreds and hundreds of people around the world that either one or the other cried, one or the other apologized, because it was the aha moment of, I didn't know that's what it meant for you, right? So what I learned in my short time back in Arizona, one, I'm dying, like the old me is dying and something new is emerging, applies for repadding as well. The other thing I learned is you get it when you get it. That just because we've gone through it doesn't mean our partner knows what we've experienced. So it's our responsibility to communicate that to our partner, to help them understand. And if it's our partner who's going through this tough stuff, it's our responsibility to ask questions to find out what they're going through. All right, you guys, I've taken you through about the first 10 years of learning. I know there's more, but those were some of the biggest things that stick out to me. In 2007, I was able to come back to Switzerland. I got recruited by a headhunting company to work as a senior project manager. And I realized that my love-hate relationship with Switzerland had turned to a lot more acceptance. There was a neutrality that came from understanding what was going on culturally in Switzerland versus my own cultural preferences that helped me chill out. So thanks to all the learning I did during my master's degree, I was able to see my experience more neutrally. And my sort of advice for any of you who are listening, if you are living in a different environment and you haven't done the work yet to really understand what are not the cliches, not the do's and don'ts, but solid cultural dimensions and preferences in your country, meaning hierarchy, direct or indirect communication, how they see self-determination and fate, all those nerdy intercultural things, but the things that help you see the differences that make the difference, I would get smart on those. And if you want resources on that, I can definitely help you find them because it's important. Okay, so when I got back, I realized that all that perseverance paid off. I was able to get a great job. I was able to benefit from the drudgery I had done with learning German years before and celebrate some of the hard work that had finally paid off. But the next challenge was around the corner. In 2008, I had my first son. And now it got real. I remember the morning that my mom and dad left after visiting me after my son was born. The taxi showed up like at 5:15 in the morning. I was in bed feeding my boy while I could hear the taxi door slam. And I was bawling my eyes out. My husband was there next to me getting ready to go for work. And I said, he didn't understand anything I said because I was in dolphin language. But what I really said to translate for you was, I can't do this. I want to move to Minneapolis right now. That moment when the taxi door slammed and I knew they were on their way to the airport, my heart was shattered. I thought, how am I going to do this? How am I going to raise my son halfway around the world? My mom and dad are on another continent. That's not okay. But my emotions calmed. I got up. I tried to shower as much as someone can shower with a brand new baby. And I realized that no matter what, I was raising a cross-cultural kid. This is a kid with a Swiss papa and an American mama. So no matter where in the world we are, this is a cross-cultural kid and it's going to take commitment. So I made the commitment. And that commitment looked like flying every 6 months to a year to see my parents, or having them come to see us so they could see their grandchild. And that meant choices. That meant sacrifices, right? Not the nicest clothes, not the highest tech TVs, not a nice car, those sort of things. I said yes to flights and no to those all those other things, because I knew it was going to take a commitment to keep this cross-cultural family close. And thanks to Skype and FaceTime and all those other things that have come to be, we've been able to do that. But if you are raising a cross-cultural family, ask yourself, what kind of commitment are you willing to make? What are you going to say yes to? And what are you going to say no to? These are tough choices. But I realized that was just the beginning, right? And how should I say it? This game of if I would have or could have, you can't play that game, because I can't make my kids not cross-cultural. It's done. So I'm going to make the best of it. So if you're raising cross-cultural kids, I want you to ask yourself, what commitments are you willing to make? Is it speaking your mother tongue, even though you're the minority language in the country? Is it, you know, having regular Skype sessions on Sunday, even though it's not convenient, with Oma? Is it saving your money and not going on a cool vacation, but going on a vacation to your crappy hometown, right? Like, what is the commitment that you need to make to keep your cross-cultural family strong? All right, 2013 was a huge chapter of my 20 years. And that is where I gave up everything that I had built in Switzerland. And we relocated temporarily to West Africa, to Burkina Faso. And I remember a time where I was in, I was in one of my friend's bathrooms and I was getting changed. We were in Ouagadougou, and it was this time during the attempted coup. And I just received a message from my husband that they were, they're called Panzers, like a military tank. Military tank was on Charles de Gaulle, and to be aware of that and maybe avoid that street in case it was dangerous. So in this situation with the attempted coup, it felt like, you know, you didn't know who were the good guys and who were not the good guys. You kind of hoped that you would be able to move from A to B without any incident. And I remember being in my bathroom and putting coins in my pocket and numbers on a handwritten piece of paper and stuffing it in my bra just in case something happened on the airport ride to the airport. And I would have to make a phone call from somewhere to call help from someone, because my husband was out of the country. And I was there with my two kids. And only on that day did the borders open, and that would enable us to be reunited as a family. And it was that time I just remember thinking, how did I get here? Right? How did I get this far where that felt like a normal idea? How did I get from walking on the safe streets of Switzerland and biking, you know, in the fresh alpine air to knowing where the location of the military tanks were? And what I've learned from my time there is that you can stretch further than you give yourself credit for. When you think about the hardest times you've been through, you're proud of yourself, aren't you? That you made it, that you did it, that you might have even broken, but not for long, that you're on track. Because you too can stretch further than you give yourself credit for. So those are the things that I learned. Just one highlight that I learned from Burkina Faso. And then that story continued. In 2016, when I was solo parenting from Switzerland, my husband was still in Burkina Faso. I remember feeling really tired, but like a tired to my bones that I'd never experienced before. And when I had blood work done, I found out that tiredness was on the road to adrenal fatigue. right? And if those of you have done any research on adrenal fatigue, you kind of need your adrenals to function. But I'd been running on, you know, fight or flight for so long that my adrenals were getting tapped. And for me to bend without breaking, for those of you who have done reading on what I believe in around resilience, you need to bend but not break. I had to up-level my strategies of taking care of myself. And so from 2016 to now, I've been working on sleeping more, moving more, running more, eating better, making better choices, because I see how important it is to take care of me. In fact, they say you should give 70% all the time so that when something happens, like a crisis, you can give 100 without breaking. I think now, even though this has been a long journey, I think I finally get it. I think I finally found a way to diligently take care of myself, even though I have, you know, moments of relapse where things get crazy and I skip my run or I get a little too little sleep. I think I finally get in my bones where making yourself a top priority and taking care of yourself is non-negotiable. So there you go. That's my soul striptease, the top struggles and learnings celebrating 20 years of living abroad. I know some of you have been here. I know that you can see yourself in this story. And some of you might have this ahead of you, right? So I'd like you to leave with these three points in mind. There are three mistakes I just don't want you to make. The first is choosing the cheap seats instead of the front row, right? When you're there, go for it. The second is focusing more on the pain than the growing, right? Remember, growing pains are called that for a reason. And when you focus on the growing, it actually recenters your focus and takes away some of the pain and gives you motivation to keep going. And three, you fail to take first-class care of yourself, especially in times of struggle. So don't make these same mistakes. Go to the front row, focus on growing, and sit in first class when it comes to taking care of yourself. I wish that I could have told myself that, my 20 years younger self. And so now I'm telling you, one, it's going to be okay. You are going to grow and change as a result of this. And two, if you use the right strategies, you can nail this. Some of these exact strategies will be shared in my upcoming training. Okay, so don't miss this free training. For those of you who are accompanying spouses, this is for you. It's called Death to the Term Trailing Spouse, How to Go from Trailing Spouse to Trailblazing Spouse. You can find the link in the show notes or on the blog. Remember that expat life is a lot like standing at the ocean's edge, right? The perspective is breathtaking. At moments, you're filled with a sense of awe. Other moments, you like giggle with joy as the waves lap at your feet. And sometimes, but not always, you get hit by a wave and drug out to sea. So if you feel like you've been struggling to keep your head above water, or that you're being thrown around in the waves, then I may just have the thing for you. You might have heard that I've opened the doors for Year of Transformation, a program designed to help you take back control of your life. This is limited to only 10 individuals, and the spots are filling super fast. So apply now by going to sundaybean.com/year-of-transformation. You've been listening to Sunday Schneider Bean. This is the Expat Happy Hour. Thank you for listening. I'll leave you with the words of Roy H. Williams. A smart man makes a mistake, learns from it, and never makes that mistake again. But a wise man finds a smart man and learns from him how to avoid the mistake altogether.
Ha ha ha!